Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Adams. Michael Adams grew up in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania, at the end of the streetcar tracks. He has a bachelor's degree in anthropology and a master's degree in planning, both from the University of Pittsburgh, and worked as a planner for Allegheny County in the 1970s. He attended the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa University. His latest book is Steel Valley, on Lummox Press. He is the author of five earlier books of poetry and essays. Michael is the winner of the 2007 Mark Fisher Poetry Prize. He lives in Lafayette, Colorado with his wife, Claire, and is the current chair of the Lafayette Cultural Arts Commission. Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Renee, and thank you very much for having me here. I very much appreciate it.
Sure, yeah. Do you want to start us off with some poems?
Yeah, I will. I'm going to read poems from this latest book, Steel Valley, and I'll start with the first poem in the book because the book is roughly chronological, and I think this poem sort of sets the tone for it. So this is called Monongahela. Looking back now, 40 years gone by, my lack of curiosity about the river I lived with daily disappoints me. Maybe that's the way of youth, to be fixated on origins and ends, things far off, the cold mountain spring, the distant sea, not the everyday. The river itself, a slow brown ox, harnessed to the yoke of industry, was as common as my neighbors and as of little interest. I carried with me in those days, before life touched me with failure and some sympathy, the hard stone of intolerance that the young may bear for the familiar to mask their fear and uncertainty. From the bluffs above Lock and Dam No. 2, I watched the tugs push their coal barges downriver. Imagine the days and nights of their long journeys, past Pittsburgh, down the Ohio, to the soft-banked Mississippi, past all the towns with their wonderful-sounding names, Gallipolis, Osceola, Tallulah. Dreamed of the bayous and salt-washed rivers, sea-tangled with life, ibises and spoonbills startling the cypress swamps, and the hot green cities, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, copper-haired women, skin sheened with sweat, and the ice-hot wail of a saxophone calling down heaven. And then I will read, I'll read the second poem. I'm not going to read these poems just in order through the book, but I'll read the second poem from the book because I think it also sets the tone. This is called The Soft Fires. I stepped into the fires in the cathedral shadows of the furnaces, enthralled to a life alloyed of iron and flesh. It was Pittsburgh where I was tested and tempered, Pittsburgh that entangled within me the chained, indifferent fury of industry and the unquenchable drives of the heart. Our first time was in her second-floor apartment in South Oakland, where the city tumbles down the bluff through blown trash and woodlands to the furnaces of Hazelwood. The house was tumbling, too, but slowly, succumbing to gravity and the landlord's indifference to paint, caulk, and shingles. We didn't care. We were young, newly free, had lightning on our minds. The maintenance of structures or love meant nothing to us. Her bed was a jumble of Indian blankets beneath bay windows that had resigned to battle against wind and rain, leaving long streaks of rust in the mustard yellow walls, flecks of plaster on the sheets, and a persistent smell of mold. Ah, but that night, there was a red glow in the belly of the clouds from the furnaces. Rain hammered the windows, and the October branches of the sycamore battered the house. I tasted the wind and the sulfur grit of the mill as I entered the fires and found her rhythm, and we rocked together, welded by our hunger. The storm's thunder mixed with a deeper sound, striking through the earth from the mill, felt more than heard, some great machine forming and shaping the bones of our city, a monster hammering deep in soil and rock. The night, our city, beautiful, molten, riven to the core. And I will read, I'm going to skip to all the way to Colorado for this poem. And this is called God's Son Lay Down. God's son walked down the street. His son walked down East Colfax Avenue on a January morning, 1 a.m. in the snow, torn sneakers in an Alto sax, and nowhere to rest his head, nowhere except in the lap of an old junkie whore. And God's son lay down his dark head there, lay down his head on the altar of flesh, weary of preaching love, offering his music of love. But no one hears. There we are all each other and all one, and each of us is holy, and the earth is holy, this old, battered, boot-worn earth. But no one hears, and so God's Son lay down his head again to die and be reborn with a new day, reborn to preach his only commandment, to love that old bum, that old drunk vet, that old woman smelling of vomit and despair who once was someone's daughter, and someone's daughter on the street now, 15 years old and runaway, pregnant punching bag with needle nightmares. His Son laid down his head because no one wanted to hear about love, only about vengeance and sin. And God's Son laid down his weary head with its undying burden of sorrow, which is no more or less than joy offered and not taken. Lay down his weary head in a back alley in the snow in the lap of an old whore and blew softly, softly to his Father the prayer of his music. Okay, I will do another one. This poem is something that comes from my college days and an experience I had once with a friend of mine from the dormitories at the University of Pittsburgh. Do you see that woman? Do you see that woman there in front of the drugstore? She's coming from work, one job to the next, 10:05 in the morning, waiting for a bus. You don't recognize her? Sure you do. Look more closely. That's right. She works in the cafeteria, starts at 5 o'clock, serves you toast and scrambled eggs. A couple of your friends were in high spirits the other day, joking about the food, called the eggs sawdust, right in front of her. You could have said something. Sawdust. How do you think that made her feel? Okay, you're young and you've never had to face it, how it wears you down, the small daily humiliations that come at you from all directions. But here's something you should know. Everybody wants to take pride in their work. Learn that one thing, really learn it, and you'll do okay in life. Look at her, a small woman, almost tiny, skin as brown as the earth, hair jet black, streaked with white. It's raining. She's standing under the awning reading a book. See how soft everything looks through the rain? Her face, the sky, the tan stone buildings and the green hills. It might surprise you to know that she once played cello in a string quartet in the capital of her native land. But that was before the war, before it all went so wrong. She doesn't need anything from you. She's got her life, and if it's not everything she dreamed it would be, well, whose is? You should go up to her and say hello. It wouldn't hurt, a small thing that might make her day. But you won't. It would never cross your mind. Not out of meanness, no, nothing like that. But because you think the world was made all new for you, because you don't understand yet that the life you're waiting so eagerly for will come to you bent, hobbling on crutches, you still think it will fly to you on wings.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Adams, reading from his new book, Steel Valley. Michael, we mentioned in your bio that you live in Colorado now, and you've been there for about 30 years, right?
Yes.
And you lived before that in Pittsburgh for 30 years.
In Pittsburgh and in the Steel Valley, yes.
Okay. And the bulk of the poems in Steel Valley deal with Pittsburgh. So I'm curious about your decision to sort of return here in the poems.
I feel like a Pittsburgher. Even though I've lived half my life in Colorado, I feel very much like a Pittsburgher. I mean, I'm still a diehard Steelers fan. And I still hope that sometime before I die, the Pirates will have a winning season again. but, you know, this – I mean, if you're born and raised in Pittsburgh, it just stays in your blood. And this book is almost a 20-year-long project. I had back in the early 90s, a friend of mine sent me a full-page ad from an industrial magazine that was the sale of a steel mill. It was the old Homestead Works when the park Corporation had bought it and was tearing it down, and they had, you know, I mean, it was just amazing. They said blast furnaces for sale, you know, I mean,
wow.
Or not blast furnaces because there weren't any there, but, you know, open hearth furnaces and sheds and all this stuff. And I thought, wow, because I would come back enough to see this happening, see the mm-hmm. you know, the mills going down, and I thought I have to do something with this. I don't know what, but I have to do something with this. And so I began working on this book, and it took a long time. I knew it wasn't going to be just a book of poetry, that it was going to be poetry, it was going to be essays. And I wanted something else, and I hit on the letters and the letter excerpts from a little book that was written by a poet named Mike Smith from, I think, somewhere in the Mahoning Valley, called Steel Valley Letters, because also the Mahoning Valley was called Steel Valley. And I thought, that's it. I need letter excerpts in here too. And it took a long time. I mean, I did a lot of research. I did an awful lot of reading.
I was curious about that together. Because especially – and I hope we'll get to some of your mill poems, your steel mill poems. There's just this real attention to detail. And I was curious how much research that you had done for the poems, because there's a real richness of an attention to that.
Well, I worked – I spent 2 summers working in the Duquesne Works of U.S. Steel when I was in college, 1 summer in the blast furnaces and 1 summer in the rolling mill. And I also – I mean, I read a whole lot of work on the mills, on labor, on unions, on you know, the steel magnates, on Carnegie and Frick, and yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I have a whole, I mean, book, you know, my bookshelf is probably several shelves full of just books related to labor and steel and, you know, Pittsburgh and, you know, those various biographies.
And I think, I mean, that's definitely present in the poems, but you also blend them with this real personal and fondness in the poems. It seems like memories.
I realized that I probably could never have written this book had I never left Pittsburgh. It's definitely the book of someone who is, you know, has left the place, you know, but looks back on it with some, you know, with a great deal of fondness, but also from a certain distance. But there is a fondness. And I was yesterday evening, I was talking to some friends of mine we had dinner with, and that came up that, I mean, people that talk about, you know, that have lived here and have worked in the mills speak with a great fondness about it. I mean, there were some terrible times, but there was a sense of having done something great, of having been involved in something that was very big, very significant. That's, you know, it's hard to capture. I mean, you can't, you know, nowadays, I mean, you know, it's not there.
Yeah, and I think you can hear some of that tone in the poems, that real appreciation for the history of this place. Do you have some of the steel mill poems that you were planning to read today? Could we hear some of those?
I do. I mean, I think the signature poem is probably too long. It's about 8 minutes. I'll read. I think this one is a good one. And there's this is Ghosts, and I'll read this one. I think this is a very good. It's very elegiac, and I think there's a lot – I mean, this book in a lot of ways is an elegy. Ghosts. Stand on the bluffs above the old river late on a winter's afternoon. A low gray sky hides the setting sun. Strain to see through the falling snow the ancient rusting furnaces, the cathedrals of industry that strove for heaven, and though failing, fell not as far short as you might think. Be very quiet, and you might hear the cries of men and women whose hearts and bodies have been scarred and hardened far beyond the years they carry. Look hard for them, reaching out to touch rivers of molten steel, to be consumed by poverty and the greed of the mighty. They speak in old languages from an old world, if they are our grandfathers or great-grandfathers, or they speak as we speak, if they are our fathers or our fathers' sons, in the aggressive and optimistic tongue of America. Whatever languages they speak, listen for the sorrow of a way of life that once seemed as enduring as the river, now gone for good. It was a hard life that broke men and broke women, yet it was a life that promised something better, and through years of sweat and struggles, strikes and beatings, delivered on that promise, if not for them, then at least for their children and grandchildren. Stay a little longer, even though it grows dark, and you are chilled to the bone, and you will hear the hopeful voices of young women bent to the hard labors of the sweatshops and laundries and the small birds of their dreams, and the hard-faced men talking in union halls, the Sokol halls, the bars of Braddock, Homestead, Duquesne, McKeesport. You might also hear echoes of strikers from another century, the sound of machine guns and the steel-shod hooves of horses as mounted troopers ride down cobbled streets. But what you hear and almost see are only ghosts. What you will see when the sun rises are the long and empty expanses of weeds and ruin, where once a nation and people were forged in sweat and pain, and the dying, hopeless towns of old men and old women, soot-blackened brick and boarded storefronts. And through it all, the river, opaque, powerful, uncaring. Its flow, its course, is the course of your life, wherever you go, scribe to its sea-reaching waters. Okay, and I will do another one, another very steel mill-related poem, and specifically related to Homestead Mills, and also touching on my love of music and, you know, the blues and, yeah. This is called Homestead Blues. And this is when I have my guitar-playing friend, he does a 12-bar blues behind this piece. Joe Magarac and John Henry are down on 7th Avenue, past the end of Amity Street, playing for tips where the rolling mill used to be. Yeah, it's a shindig in Steel Town, with Joe on the lap steel and John Henry on guitar and harp. You got to make ends meet when you're on the street, and they've got one hell of a repertoire. Muddy Waters, Mississippi John Hurt, Robert Johnson, and Lowdown Growlin' Howlin' Wolf. They've lived the blues, man, and they know how to play 'em. You can't swing that double jack or bend them red-hot bars forever. Those days are long gone, and it's time to get up and get on. So drop a dollar or two, whatever you can spare in that open guitar case, because they're pouring their hearts and souls into it, singing about something gone, and it ain't never coming back. You know it, brother. But, sister, as long as we got it in song, we got it in our hearts, and it won't ever die. Maybe you'll wander down there late at night when the clouds are blowing fast across a moonless sky, down past the long, rusting buildings, the broken glass, through the weeds, and there's nobody else around. But if you're quiet and lucky, you might hear voices down by the old pump house. Maybe it's Joe and John, and maybe Woody, too, and Joe Hill, Cisco, and Sonny, and Leadbelly. All of them down on the riverbank, jamming away, singing the sweet, low, sad songs, singing about getting knocked down and dragging yourself back up time after time. But you do it. You keep doing it. And that's what counts, makes you a man or a woman. That's when you want to sit down, just sit down and be quiet, and let that music and that longing and the old, old river carry you away.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Adams, reading from his new book, Steel Valley. So something else I wanted to touch on with your book is that in addition to having this sort of variety of styles that you mentioned with letters and poems and essays and some even haiku-esque poems, you also touch on, you know, the industrial world and, you know, blues poems too. And you touch on the industrial world and the natural world. And I'm curious about how that approach works for you. I feel like other poets might be sort of feel pressured to sort of just focus on one style or one subject matter.
Yeah, I understand that. And it's easy to do that and, you know, get yourself classified in a certain way. I have never felt that. I mean, I don't know why that is, but I have always felt like the two are not, you know, there's no distinct separation from them. And I put a lot of that down to where I grew up and the topography of Pittsburgh in a way. I mean, where I grew up in West Mifflin was probably no more than two miles from the Homestead Mills, you know, and if you went up on just up the block, you could look down on the Edgar Thompson Works and you could look down on Duquesne and McKeesport. And yet, you know, there's so many narrow valleys and woodlands that there were always woods to play in. And, you know, so nature was always right there too. And I've always kept that connection. I felt like I can do both. And, you know, I mean, my poems about nature and mountains often combine, you know, the work world also, and a lot of it is reverie about that, you know, mountain poems where I as the poet or the poet, the speaker is having a reverie about something altogether different, you know, just as the mind wanders as you're walking.
There's that sense of wandering in the poems. You have really nice organic transitions across time and between thoughts. Can you talk about how that works and when you're writing them?
Well, yes. And I mean, you know, what I strive to do is to make it look like it's easy and natural, but it's often not. You know, I mean, I kind of think back to, I guess it was Allen Ginsberg, first thought, best thought. Mm. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. It's very true. But also there's an awful lot to be said for editing. And I mean, there are some poems in here that – I mean, the title poem, Steel, which is just too long to do. I mean, I have a whole file of various edits. And there must be, and it's over a period of probably 7 or 8 years. And it's – if I were to go back to the first edition of it, I could say, yeah, I could see how the final product – came from here, but I can probably see that because, you know, I did all that, mm-hmm. you know, was involved in that. But, you know, it's very different. And what I've often discovered is that I will end up – something will hook me, you know, and what I end up with in the final product will never even have that initial line or that initial thought somehow in it. So there's a lot of obsessive, you know, sort of thinking. I mean, I use walking is a great way for me to think, you know, and I'll often just walk and think about a line or transition and say, that transition just doesn't work. You know, it's just, I mean, how do I make it work? What do I do with it? You know.
Well, it's nice to hear some poems that have been so crafted and then seem sort of fluid and effortless in their final print versions. Mm-hmm. Can we hear some more?
Sure. Let me do... I want to do this poem because this is this comes from one of those just amazing experiences you have sometimes in life and seeing how everything connects. And there, I mean, a lot of you listeners out there may know that Andrew Carnegie built over 7,000 libraries, and they're scattered all over the United States and even Canada. And in fact, everything. Well, everything's connected in a way. So this poem is Sunnyside, and it's about that. Dolores and I drive the winding blacktop that hugs Cement Creek. Sunny May morning, coming down from Gladstone and the Sunnyside Mine, all abandoned now, back to Silverton. High above, the sun shines on the slopes of Storm Peak, but we're at the bottom of the valley, running through a dark boreal forest of spruce and fir. Dolores points out the grade of the old narrow-gauge railroad built in the 1880s that served the mine, closed since the early 1990s, the last working silver mine in San Juan County. The rails pulled up years ago, stacked like rusted cordwood at the railroad station in town. Signs of bygone mining days are all around, falling down buildings, wood silvered with age, holes in the hillsides, slate-blue tailing ponds. And after a few moments of silence, I say, those rails might have been made where I grew up, Homestead, Andrew Carnegie Steelworks. Yes, they were, Dolores says. I saw Homestead stamped on the sides of the rails. And then I see it. You never leave anything behind. You take it all with you. Think you've left the old mill town, the low green hills, the slow brown river, the smoke and stink of it all. But it's all seeped into your pores and still with you, right here beside the fast mountain stream and soaring peaks, the mills of Pennsylvania and the mines of Colorado, all tangled together. Carnegie built his mills, fed them with the blood and dreams of men and women, brought by the boatload from Hungary, Slovakia, Poland, Italy, Greece, Russia, to the hell and hope and struggle of America, $1 a day, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, $100 to the widows when the men died in explosions, cave-ins, fell into vats of molten metal. He fed it all to the furnaces and mines, ore, coal, and men. Crushed his workers with guns and thugs and mind-numbing labor. Made his fortune and built a nation. And then he gave it all away. I learned to swim in the basement of the Carnegie Library in Homestead. Fed my love of books there. Gazed up in awe at the Tyrannosaurus skeleton in the Carnegie Museum in Pittsburgh. Read there about the Rocky Mountains and dreamed. Now, all these years later, I find a Carnegie Library in Silverton. How we are shaped by land and water, the work of a lifetime, nothing ever lost. Cement Creek, the Monongahela River, everything carried along, Silverton Mines quiet, sinking by slow stages back into the earth, Homestead Mills gone to weeds and failing memory, a dilapidated assay office, beside it a rusted ore cart filled with black soil and raspberry bushes.
Okay, we have time for one more short one.
Okay, then I will do the wheel. The dawn is filled with the glory of birds erupting from the crowns of cottonwoods in spreading umbers of winged black, and the man on the gravel path, lost in thoughts of the day ahead, stops as first one tree, then the next and the next through the meadow, west along the creek, explodes as the small birds rise to the blue spring morning, wheeling one way, then another, until before long a common motion has been achieved, so that one great wheel circles overhead twice, sweeping up stragglers, rising to greet the sun, rising above the prairie, and only then moving away, and the man watches. So many birds, stunned to thoughtless grace, until they all disappear over the far houses of his town, over the streets growing with morning traffic, the human wheel forming, turning, each with purpose, singular, yet together towards the day.
The poetry of Michael Adams. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Renee.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time every Wednesday night at 7:30 for Prosody 91.3 WYEP.